on 1116 SEN. League teams for Vogue's Draft, proudly supporting 130 Victorian local footy teams.
G'day, Bretto. How are you?
Good to be with you, Finey. The fortnight flies very quickly when you're not on radio with you on a Thursday night. But just as quickly as the fortnight flies, doesn't the season fly by very quickly? We're into round four already. It's amazing. We're already a month into the season and there's so much going on.
I'm interested that you say that because it has... Oh, I think you can have, cut some slack to teams in the first two, maybe 3 weeks that they can turn things around and it won't be indicative. What they've done in 2 or 3 weeks, we'll say the three rounds that we've had, is not necessarily written in stone. But I think after four rounds of football, we have got some pretty entrenched notions about all 18 sides. So if that is the case, and I think it's a reasonable way to look at the season, Richmond are going to have to beat Melbourne and do so with some authority if they want to live up to any notion of having a crack at the top four.
Yeah, I think that's a fair call. Yep.
Carlton, I don't think they can turn around how they're now considered, especially because they have had an introspection and looking differently at the season now that they did earlier. Now, Essendon, if they go on and beat Collingwood, I think we view them as a challenger for the top four.
Certainly do.
If Collingwood beat Essendon, I think we look at them as a possible finalist, maybe different to how teams were looking at them earlier on in the season.
Especially after round one when I was with you last, when we were looking at it after they'd lost to... who'd they lose to in round one, sorry? I'm trying to think off the top of my head. No, Collingwood beat
Brisbane, yeah, but correct. Then they suffered a pretty comprehensive loss to Adelaide. Yep. Anyhow, but I still... Maybe not. I think Collingwood would have to win and win well. But if Essendon would be a scalp. Now, if GWS beat Gold Coast, there's two different tales. Gold Coast will have lost any chance of redemption because they got some credit back last week in the loss to Geelong. But if GWS to win, do we start looking at them differently?
I think we probably do now, don't we?
Really differently.
I agree.
Could they nibble at the eight if they win?
I think they certainly can, the way they're going. I think they're good enough. And from what I've seen so far this year, I think that their $1.42 mark at the moment is pretty much spot on.
Fremantle have already, I think their stocks have been...
They have risen in 3 weeks.
Well, their stocks have become, again, blue chip.
Yeah.
As they were at the start of last season. But if they beat Sydney, as they should in... On their first three games, they should beat Sydney in Freo.
They should.
In Perth. Then we look at them as a possible premier. If Brisbane suffers a loss at home to West Coast, they become
a wooden spoon possibility.
Geelong, if they lose to North Melbourne, albeit with some a key player out or two, we start talking about Geelong outside the eight for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, I think realistically, I think it's been raised in certain circles before now, but I think at 1-3 that would make them.
Yep.
And the one win being a fall over the line job against Gold Coast at home.
Yeah, see, that's enough. I think I like footy fans, and I reckon most of the SEN listeners have got great instinct and feel for the game. I don't like to be read precedent, chapter and verse. Well, the record of teams starting the season 1-3, but who cares? We know what we're seeing. And if Geelong lose to North at home, albeit that they're not favourites and it is a weakened team, then we start to get a sense of Geelong's real vulnerability, especially because they have not been able to necessarily right the ship back at Simmons Stadium. If North Melbourne were to lose, on the other hand, then they start getting into a tussle for the final eight rather than a tussle for the top four, which is where they ended last year, though not at the end of the home and away season.
Exactly. And when you consider their next month of form, which I think the guys in the run home covered, it's a tough run. So it's a big game this weekend for North.
Yep. You see, off the SMS, Geelong were 0-3 and 0-7. And, well, look, we know...
Different team then.
We know what that team did and we know how it's ageing now. And it's just about feel. It's just about a sense of... What do you think of Geelong at the moment? As I said, I just think it's a very important round because we can now start to make some valued judgments.
I think you're 100% right. I'm doing an article for Inside Footy this week, and generally we try and steer clear of the stats articles in the first three rounds of the season because you get some outliers there and there are some reasons behind certain performances and statistics, but after a month, you've got four games under your belt. That's when you can start to at least look at some trends coming through, and I think we can certainly take that in consideration with each of those teams this week and how they've started the season and what it might lie and what might lie in wait for the rest of the year.
Now, we know that, of course, Saturday marks the 100th anniversary of Anzac Day. It's a day of remembrance. It's a day that we all mark differently, and I want to, first of all, congratulate the run home on that very moving chat that they had with the father of Cameron Baird, who paid the ultimate price in heroic sacrifice, received the Victoria Cross when he passed on June the 22nd, 2013, in Uruzgan, Afghanistan, sacrificing his own life, and he did so with immense bravery, not once, not twice, but three times, going back into hellish fire from entrenched snipers, and he did so to draw fire away from his own battalion. Incredible courage.
Amazing courage.
And I've got to say that this Saturday, football does play a very important role, and I think Australian rules football, there's a reason why there is a very strong connection, and the RSL embraced the upgrade of the Anzac Day football when Essendon and Collingwood made it a very special day. And it's because if in Anzac Day and the Anzac spirit and our servicemen and the way they have served in various theatres of war means different things to different people, and there's no right or wrong, of course, Bruno, but I think the word mateship comes through. For me, it is the strongest resonating feature of the Anzac Corps. A healthy, not a contemptuous, but or a dangerous in a military sense, disregard for authority. That larrikin streak of the Aussie digger has been told over and over, but in the trenches or on the beaches or wherever Australians served side by side with other Australians, there was a real sense of mateship and a sense of obligation to see it through because my mate's in there. And whilst no one would ever compare footy to war, there obviously was something, a lot that the RSL saw in Australian rules football that required that same level of commitment. One in, all in. And of course it's a game that was born in Australia. Given what Gallipoli and how it unfolded, our colonial forebears gave us rugby and gave us cricket, but we made Australian rules ourselves. So there's no surprise. It's a very important part of the remembrance, I think.
Oh, I think you're 100% spot on, Finey. I'm one who really doesn't like the link between going into battle on a footy field and going into battle at war.
Yeah, they're very different battles, of course.
And when that's raised, you sort of cringe a little bit when people talk about that, whether it's in the media or even inside footy clubs, you hear it a little bit. So no, I think it's a massive week, and I think the most important thing is learning the history of our country and what's gone on before us. And I love watching the doco channels this week just to find out every little bit of new information that I didn't know. And I'm a big, not a history buff, but I love that sort of element of society and even World War II stuff and also the American side. But certainly from an Anzac point of view, if you can get your kids in front of the doco channels this week, if you've got the history channel and all the other ones, that there's some amazing shows on this week, and I'd certainly recommend to sit down if they're old enough to learn and take it in, because there's some gory stuff that goes on in them, but that's really worthwhile. And the link with footy, I think you make a really good case.
There was a piece in the Herald Sun today, a well-written piece by Eddie Maguire, who is
over in Turkey,
yep, at Gallipoli as we speak. And he quotes Theodore Roosevelt, the United States president. And these words are very, very important, and there's a reason I'm bringing them up tonight. And they are, "We meet here to pay homage to the memory of our illustrious dead, but let us keep ever before our minds the fact that mere lip loyalty is no loyalty at all, and that the only homage that counts is the homage of deeds, not words." Now, for every sport league official, every commentator, every broadcaster, privileged enough to speak on Anzac Day or about Anzac Day, when you use the term mateship, don't pay lip loyalty to it. Think about what mateship really means. And the AFL has just gone through 2 years of the Asada affair. So this game that is so important to return servicemen and will play a big part on Anzac Day was tested for mateship 2 years ago, and the AFL failed dismally, and Asada's behaviour was insidious. I will never use the term un-Australian unless it's in a parody or a joke, but it was unconscionable, because one of the first things they did after the darkest day in sport was announced was they set up a whistleblower hotline, and they asked for footballers and club officials to ring up and dob in their teammates and their fellows at their club if they suspected them of any wrongdoing. Now, that is the very antithesis of mateship. Indeed, one broadcaster who will, I'm sure, deliver an erudite speech about mateship come Saturday, wrote an opinion piece in the Herald Sun and was scathing of an Essendon footballer for attacking Kyle Reimers for letting his mates down. And that same broadcaster, who will again speak in terms with great gravitas and earnestly on Saturday, was a strong advocate for footballers turning on their football teammates on the whistleblower hotline because of a perceived scourge that was going to destroy the game. So it's not, even in our game, a matter of just giving lip loyalty. The AFL, under Andrew Demetriou, turned its back on the notion of Aussie mateship and asked for mate to dob in mate. This administration hasn't gone down that track, and I hope we never see it again. Let's take a break, come back and do League Teams.
League Teams, Richmond.
We're from Tigerland, a fighting fury, we're from Tigerland.
Melbourne.
It's a grand old flag, it's a high-flying flag, it's the emblem for me and for you. It's the emblem of the team we love, the team of the red and the blue.
Let's have a look at the first of the games. Have we got the rest of that, A-Rod? Let's just play it out. Richmond, the opener, Melbourne. Thank you. To be played at the MCG on Friday night. They want this to be a permanent fixture. Does the Melbourne Football Club, maybe with Richmond. I don't know whether it'll happen, but Anzac Day Eve, we could have Richmond and Melbourne in perpetuity. So let's have a look at the teams for this Friday night's version thereof. Richmond from the back line. David Asprey, Jake Batchelor, Alex Rance. Halfback line of Bashar Hawley, Nick Floston and Nathan Drummond. A centre line of Brandon Ellis, Trent Coxon and Camden McIntosh. Half forward line of Stephen Morris, Shane Edwards and Anthony Miles. A full forward line that reads Jack Riewoldt, Ben Griffiths and Sam Lloyd. Followers are Ivan Maric, Dustin Martin and Taylor Hunt. The interchange Nathan Gordon, Sean Grigg, Matt Arnott and Matt McDonough. Emergencies, Ty Vickery, Ben Lennon and Todd Elton in. Nathan Drummond, Matt Arnott and Matt Madonna. Out, Chris Knights with a hamstring. Looks like months again. Troy Chaplin with a calf. Chris Newman with a back injury. And the new man is Nathan Drummond, drafted just last year in the National Draft.
The Melbourne side from the back line, Colin Garland, Lyndon Dunn and Neville Jetta. The halfbacks, Jeremy Howe, Tom McDonald and Christian Salem. The centre line of Daniel Cross, Nathan Jones and Heritier Lumumba. The half forwards are Ben Newton, Jesse Hogan and Jeff Garlett. The forward line, Dean Kent, Chris Dawes and Jack Watts. The followers, Mark Jamar, Dom Tyson and Bernie Vince. The interchange for the Ds, Angus Brayshaw, Jay Kennedy Harris, Viv Michie and Aaron Vandenberg. The emergencies, Jimmy Tumpus, Cam Pedersen and Jack Grimes. Just the one change for Melbourne. In is Viv Michie after some strong form in the VFL last week, and out is Sam Frost with what is said as a foot, but it's actually a broken toe.
Ooh, that is serious. Anzac Day Eve sees Anthony Hudson and Matt Granlin call, Dermot Brereton, Cam Mooney special comment, and Rowan Connolly on the boundary. The A-team We'll take you to the G for Richmond v Melbourne. Richmond are $1.26. Melbourne are $3.90. 9429-1116. Now, our best caller tonight has a chance to win something very special indeed. Sharon has produced a limited run of the Centenary of Anzac Special Edition Football. Sharon footballs have been taken into every battle that Australia has taken part in. Australian soldiers have enjoyed some downtime behind enemy lines, kicking footballs on the beaches of Gallipoli all the way to the shores of Vietnam, from the jungles of New Guinea to the sands of the Middle East, with famous games taking place in the shadows of the pyramids. Games took place between battalions in London and many other training bases, including Central Australia and Darwin. A football league was even organising Changi Prison and Stalag 383 during the Second World War. And Sharon will be donating all profits from these footballs to the Shrine, which are shrines of remembrance around Australia. These are limited edition, beautifully gold embossed footballs. On it, they speak of the Shrine of Remembrance of Melbourne. There's an image of the Shrine of Remembrance. It has 1915 to 2015 on it. And they come in a special box, of course, again, replete with Anzac Day memories. Now, these footballs are available. They're a 1,000 and 1,000 only. And you can pick up your own by going to the Sharon website or to the AFL website and following the prompts. But you could also win one by being a caller this very evening. So let's kick it off with Andrew in Rover. We'll give this football, I've special thank you to Rod Loader, who dropped this in for me. The company that, I think it is Rod's company. I played golf with Rod at the Vic Open Pro-Am and got to meet him. He was here. He was in, well, he's a Melbourne boy, but he had Ian Botham in tow, who he manages.
Sport Pro.
He's a cracking bloke, Rod. So I want to thank Rod for his generosity. And one of our listeners will have this very special ball. Andrew's in Roeville. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, gents. How's it going?
Very good, thanks.
Just want to talk about the Richmond lineup for tomorrow. I've noticed the ins are obviously Matt Madonna, Arnott, and Nathan Drummond. And I look at the outs with experience going Chaplin and Chris Newman in particular. And you're probably dropping about 400 games of experience. And the main thing I look of concern tomorrow is looking at Melbourne's first three games under Paul Roos. They've played a very high-pressured game. Now I'm thinking, could those three players that are coming in, these young players, be a downfall for tomorrow's game? Could Richmond be taking this game quite lightly?
Look, I don't think they're taking it lightly. The three that I look at coming into the side there, Andrew, is they're three inside ball winners, I guess. Look, McDonough plays across half-back, plays across half-forward, but he's brave. He's got a strong body. I actually really like Matt McDonough as a player. I'm surprised he hasn't played more. Nathan Drummond's got a strong body. He was a 19-year-old last year in the TAC Cup. He likes winning the hard contested ball. That's what he's built on. And obviously, Matt Arnott, we've seen him in the past. Look, that's what he does, is he wins hard footy, and he'll give away the odd free kick along the line, but he'll put his head over it. So I think the thing with Melbourne, as you mentioned there, is the pressure that they've put on so far. For the majority of their games, there was that big lull, obviously, against GWS, and they were pretty good last week against Adelaide. I think Richmond will be able to stand up to it. They've been used to it in the first three rounds. They have been the hunted now, Richmond. So when you look at what the Bulldogs did, I think they'll take a great lesson of the way that they were hunted that day by the Bulldogs, and they should be able to take it into this game against Melbourne, knowing what's to come.
Thanks for the call, Andrew. Mark's in Doreen. We'll take a call from the Melbourne fan and then get, Brett, your take on the game. Of course, $1.26 sportsbet.com.au, Mark Richmond. Melbourne are at $3.90. Clear favourites, and I'll be interested to see whether your take on the game is indicative of those odds. Mark in Doreen, good evening, mate.
Yeah, g'day, Mark. G'day, fellas. Look, it's good that Drummond's come in. I'm not a Richmond supporter, but good to say our first game are getting a run. The fact that they both, well, I'm not sure if both clubs, but Melbourne want to lock it in as an Anzac Eve game, I think it's a great thing because Melbourne and Richmond, co-tenants at the G many years ago, got a good history, and always, the games always match up well and historically have. No matter when Melbourne was bottom or Richmond were, there was always good rivalry. Good to see Viv Michie back in. Don't know about the odds. I reckon the odds are a bit thrown.
It's a fair call. Let's get Brett Anderson's take on that. Just on Fiv, he's come from Fremantle and found it hard to crack. Nice size of, as they used to say, nice lump of a lad.
He's a good size for a mid.
And I don't know, he's got all the... He seems to have the requisite skills and the size and the tank to play league football. I guess he just needs a good run at it and it might fall his way. It's funny because at Fremantle it was a case of probably not ever being able to break into that midfield. And at Melbourne it just looks when he's played that he could do playing with a slightly better midfield as he seems to be. I'm not saying he's an outside player completely, but he'd benefit maybe from a little bit of class around him. So too much class, he's like Goldilocks.
He's caught in between, isn't he?
Well, you know, one was two. But hopefully he'll find his spot.
Look, the one thing with Viv, and I've known him since he was probably 14, he actually had work experience at Inside Footy with us and was a very quietly spoken kid, very shy, and then grew up to get drafted. And
I think he's Roseanne Michie's nephew.
Yeah, so played for Fitzroy in the juniors and came through there. But very quiet kid. Happy to see him going well when he came to Melbourne. Thrilled that he came to Melbourne. The thing is, with him, he's a little bit one-paced, and he needs to take the most of his opportunities now. Look, that midfield is getting stronger and stronger by year, and even by week, when you look at the guys who are left out of the side. So when you get an opportunity in that team, yes, they haven't won every game. They've only won one so far. You need to make the most of it, because you've got guys like Brayshaw, who's going to be pushing for more time now. There's also a few others coming through there, and obviously Petrarca isn't playing. So he needs to make the most of it, and it's a real crunch time now for Viv, and hopefully he takes it, because his form in the VFL is outstanding. The only thing is he just needs to cover the ground a little bit better from on the spread. But I'll probably agree with Mark. I think this game's a bit closer than $3.90 to $1.26, especially with the outs for Richmond and who's not playing. I think Melbourne are a pretty good chance. They've led at quarter time in each of their first three games this year. They just need to make that count. They've given up leads. They've conceded leads. A bit like they did last year in last quarters, but this year's been a little bit earlier. Certainly, I think there's going to be a good contest on Friday night.
Richmond seem to be so purposeful up at the Gabba. I can't believe that Brisbane are that bad. I'm giving Richmond more credit for that game than others have. People are sort of writing Brisbane off and saying, well, at least without Rockliffe, and not much to kick up to in the forward line, that they were just absolutely an easy kill. But I watched the game and I thought that, and they made some terrible mistakes, Brisbane, but early pressure parlayed into perceived pressure throughout the game. Richmond, I think, I really like their spread of goal kickers. They had a number of players who kicked at least two goals.
And that's important to them too, instead of being very focused on Jack.
And for mine, given the way that they were able to work Brisbane hard early and get a result, I think that they can come out and do similar misdeeds to Melbourne. It's for the Demons midfield could be described really as a blue-collar midfield, couldn't it? You know, you've got Nathan Jones there.
There's probably the one thing you look at the Melbourne midfield, there's no outside burst, so it is very one-paced. They're all hard workers. You know what, I'd probably take a team full of hard workers and that give you an honest effort each week than you do the flighty ones who might give you that burst on the outside. So I like their mix. They just need someone who gets it on the outside.
I'm comfortable in tipping Richmond in this one.
I'm tipping Richmond too, but I think it's going to be closer.
I think the odds are about right, which means I think they'll win, not outrageously, but 30 to 40
points. 5-6 goals, yeah. I think maybe 3 or 4 goals to the Tigers.
Let's go to Michael in Mount Waverley. G'day, Michael.
Oh, g'day, guys. How you going?
Going well.
That's good. Might be a bit of a pointless stat, but just to let you know that Richmond are going into the game with 494 games of experience, and Melbourne are going in with 818 games. So I think odds might be a little bit skewed there.
Yeah, that's a really good stat. And when you look at it, Richmond's side, there are a fair few inexperienced players in that side, but I think they come into a team led by Cochin and Riewoldt. They've got that structure there, and especially down back with Alex Rance. I think the big thing is going to be the Melbourne midfield and if they can get into the forward line and make the most of those scoring opportunities, because, look, Rance doesn't give up too many opportunities.
Who locks down on Lumumba?
Locks down on Lumumba. Well, Richmond generally don't have a tagger. They've tried Sean Grigg there in the past. They've had Matt Thomas in those roles. He's not in the side. I don't think they've got
it. He doesn't require a tagger, but he requires
Taylor Hunt. Someone on the outside. Maybe you go head-to-head with him and try and make him defend. You try and take him back deep inside 50 where he hasn't been comfortable in the past. Look, he's certainly the one player for Melbourne who will take the game on. But I think that Richmond are probably just going to be a little bit good on the night, but I certainly give Melbourne a chance to run them close.
Steve's in Glenroy. Good evening, Steve.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Good, thanks.
That's good. Just want to talk about Anzac Day and the whole. I work at the MCG and have for the last 15 years.
Excellent.
And just a day, and just it's amazing where there's almost 100,000 people there, and when the minute of silence on, there's hardly a sound in the ground. It's just, it sends a chill up your spine.
And it's going to be special on Saturday, of course, the 100th anniversary. It's a special number, but it's a real opportunity to reflect on Australians' service in various theatres of war, from the landing of Gallipoli, which really imprinted the Anzac notion, to today. And it's funny that there's not an enormous element of co-celebration with New Zealand. I mean, it is the Australian-New Zealand Army Corps and Armed Corps, and it's in Australia we have really celebrated it, I think, on our own, which is okay. We recognise that we served with New Zealand, and there the name Anzac becomes important. But today, of course, we have separate armed services, and it no longer is what it was. Let's go to Spiro in Carnegie. Hello, Spiro.
Guys, how are we?
Good, thanks.
Excuse me. Trent Cotchin, very, very good footballer. Don't have an issue with him being captain of the club. But do you think that his possessions hurt other teams? Because I watch him and he gets the hard ball, but I just don't think he hurts other teams, because a lot of them are just little chippy kicks, and I just wondering what your thoughts were.
They hurt last week. I thought he was pretty good. He got back to his pushing forward of the footy, kicking goals ways of a couple of years ago when they even, I think they played him forward against St Kilda, was it, finding it?
Yes,
Eddie had one,
don't
he? Kicked five. So he's got that ability, and I think that's his best form. Look, he does get a lot of those little chip kicks and handballs around the back, but that's a way of breaking a tag in some ways. He does get dangerous, though, when he gets forward of the footy and being able to get on the end and kick goals and create attacks inside 50, which I thought he did last week. So he was starting to get back to the best form we've seen him in the past.
What we ask of the modern midfielder is outrageously difficult.
Get to the back pocket and then try and kick goals at the other end.
We want you to run the entire day. When you've got it, be brilliant and explosive. And when your opponent has it, be accountable and all the while be able to withstand beltings and bashings and lockdown players, etc.
Yep.
But that being said, he falls short in one key element, and that is he's not fast enough to be explosive. So he needs to be elusive,
smart,
and creative, and work well in close. And he's got a great pair of hands, so he's tough, he's durable, he can mark. But when you don't break the lines, that often means that you are putting the ball in the hands of another player to do so, and they might get the credit. So what appears maybe to be other people's brilliance is often set up by Trent Cotchin, and he just might not have, to a football fan, the same impact. But
has he got
the
Robert
ball
Harvey
has to get
in?
There. Well, he's just not...
He's got the same as some elements that Harves had?
I think he's very similar, but he's just not quick.
Harves wasn't super quick, either.
No,
he's super smart.
I know, he's fast. Footballers, I'm talking about, when I say quick, I don't want to use the word slow. Trent can't run and, he can't run.
He's not going to be running in a grand final sprint.
Robert Harvey was very quick, very fast. When he wrong-footed an opponent, I just can't picture him getting run down. When he chose to run away from opponents, he could put the afterburners on. They don't look like afterburners, and they're not chasing the ball with another person type afterburners, but with the ball in his hand, he was off and gone. And unfortunately, Trent doesn't have the ability to burn off opponents. But that doesn't mean he's still not a wonderful footballer and probably doesn't get the credit he deserves, because he's, we love the spectacular line breaker. Like some of the Dane Swan's like Robert Harvey. He waddles. He's, he looks like a...
But he does have that burst.
I'm saying, but he's fast.
Yeah, he does.
There are funny ways of looking fast.
Yep.
Let's take a break. Oh, Rick in Coburg, sorry. G'day, Rick.
Hi. I think the coaches are going to play a massive part in this game, particularly last time they played. Paul Ruse, I think, out-coached Thimmer in that what he had that hard press happening in the defence, and they kept playing rebound and got the Tigers on the rebound. But I think this time round, Thimmer's going to outsmart him. I think if the Tigers have got clean possession, and particularly with their link-up handballs and entry into the 50. If they get that right, the Tigers are going to be really, really hard to beat. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, great observation, Rick. And it's something I've just been looking at for a story for Inside Footy this week, is rebounds from 50 and the end results. And Richmond are the best team in the comp at taking the ball from the defensive 50 and getting a score at the end so far through three rounds. Guess who the number one team is for stopping that from the opposition?
Bulldogs.
Melbourne.
Oh, really?
So you've got two contrasting styles. Melbourne are only conceding 6.7 points a game from rebound 50s.
I can't believe Richmond's number one after, because I went to Bulldogs Richmond. They couldn't get that going at all.
Yeah, but they've averaged 24 points a game from rebound 50s, so scoring at the other end, where Melbourne are only conceding 6.7.
How many did they get last week, Richmond?
I haven't got that on me right now.
Yeah, I think it would be heavy.
So probably heavy stat base based on their game against Brisbane. They did do it a few times because I did that game, Richmond-Bulldogs, but the Bulldogs were very good at then spreading them going the other way. So it's going to be a nice little contrast of styles. And I think that's a great call in terms of the coaches, because that stat really points to that remark that you made, Rick.
All of those who rang in, keep listening towards the end of the 8 o'clock hour, because you might win this fantastic limited edition Sharon Anzac Day Centenary of Anzac Day Special Edition football. Try and get one yourself. There's 1,000 available, and you can get it through Sharon and the AFL. We're going to take a break, and when we return, it is Anzac Day football, and we start with the first of those games over in New Zealand, where somebody's pointed out they are passionate about their remembrance services. I'm absolutely sure they are, but I'm just saying that there's not. I don't know of a lot of stuff. And the one that we had in sport, Australia, Melbourne Storm versus the Warriors, was dispensed with this year, which is
odd. Because the Warriors have got a home game. They want to play at their home. We've also had the Anzac Test before in terms of Australia and New Zealand in rugby league. They've played that in the past. There has been sort of that, recognition from a sporting sense.
And just very quickly, PK wanted to know why I would integrate talk about Asada in the AFL with the Anzac Day 100th centenary. And it's because of those words by Theodore Roosevelt. And you will hear countless speeches and words spoken, but deeds are what matter and not words. And when we want to talk about mateship, let's think how we can best manifest it. And we need to be vigilant when we see obvious examples of it dying in Australian culture. And when it is right in front of our faces in our beloved Australian rules football, then we need to be ever vigilant. So words, cheap. Deeds, actions, far less so. Eyes open, and let's live up to that mateship and spirit in our lives. And when we see it being flagrantly flogged, speak out. A break, and when we come back, we'll have a look at the Saints of the Blues.
League teams, St Kilda. When the Saints go marching in, when the Saints go marching in. Carlton.
We are the Navy Blues. We are the old dog Navy Blues.
So to New Zealand on the 100th anniversary of Anzac Day. Go St Kilda Carlton to the Westpac Stadium with Brett Phillips and Nathan Thompson to call the action. Now it starts at 11:10 a.m. Melbourne time.
So it's good for us at home on an early Saturday morning.
It's a very early start.
It's a bit like the EPL.
About 20 minutes before I start umpiring down at Ormond. So I'll have to watch this one in replay. The odds, St Kilda $3.05, Carlton $1.38. Well, that's probably not what many Carlton supporters expected after three games that they've seen. But when you hear the teams, it might explain. St Kilda from the back line. Sean Dempster, Luke Delaney, Cameron Shenton. Halfback line of Dylan Robertson, Sam Fisher and Jaron Geary. The centre line of the New Zealander, Shane Savage, David Armitage and Jack Nunes. Half forward line, Adam Schneider, Josh Bruce, Tim Membry. Forward line reads Jack Billings, Paddy McCartan and Jack Loney. The ruck division of Billy Longa, Luke Dunstan and Jack Steve. In the interchange, Tom Curran, Nathan Wright, Ahmed Saad, Jack Sinclair. Emergencies are Tom Hickey, Darren Minchington and Blake Akers. In comes Tom Curran, out goes Maverick Weller, injured.
The Carlton side from the back line, Sam Rowe, Michael Jamieson and Zach Tui. The half-back line of Cade Simpson, Sam Doherty, newly re-signed to a three-year contract. And Andrew Walker, the centre line of Dennis Armfield, Patrick Cripps and Andreas Everett, who's, I think, going under the radar, playing some good footy. Half forwards Tom Bell, Levi Casbolt and David Allard. The forward line of Mark Murphy, Liam Jones and Lockie Henderson. The followers Cameron Wood, Bryce Gibbs and Andrew Carrazzo. Interchange Blaine Bokhorst, Dylan Buckley, Ed Curno and Jason Tutt. The emergencies are Matt Dick, Nick Graham and Christian Jacks. The ins for Carlton, Blaine Bokhorst for his first game from Swan Districts, the mature age draftee from last year. Dylan Buckley back into the team and Jason Tutt for his first game, I think, for the footy club, having crossed from the Western Bulldogs. The outs are Chris Judd with a back, Chris Yaron suspended and Kieran Byrne with a hamstring.
Interesting that Blaine Bokhorst is about to make his debut for Carlton. Not that it's a surprise. He was a surprise selection, their first pick in last year's national draft. 21 years of age, a mature age recruit. And when you take mature ages, the implication is that they should be playing pretty early on in the next AFL season.
Plug and play.
But Mick Malthouse was asked about Blaine Bokhorst at a press conference this week, I think the Tuesday chat, and one thing, he's about to equal the record for most games coached, and throughout that time he's never been exactly transparent when it comes to letting the press, the media, know what he intends to do. Have a listen to this on Bokhorst.
He's a 25-position player from the weekend. He still needs weight and he needs consistency.
Well, the implication there was that Blaine Bokhorst wasn't going to play.
He's in.
He's into the team.
That's code for he's in.
Yeah, that's but I'm assuming when he says he needs weight, that's physical.
Jared.
Yeah, physical bulk, not Jared, because Jared ain't coming back.
Yeah, I think it's good that he's in, though. Yeah. I think that it's good Carlton supporters that they're going to see their first-round pick from last year. They saw him in the NAB Challenge, but he gets a run out here against a team that, look, there's certainly a good chance of winning this weekend.
Can these young Saints, look, last week without Nick Riewoldt, they really looked as though they, for much of the game, didn't have an idea of where to kick the ball coming out of the back line. They're talismanic, hard-running and brilliant captain wasn't there and the options were invisible. No, actually, they wore black and white. So what do they do when they come out of the back line against Carlton? They need to be far more assured in their ball usage and hit up a target. As the game continued, young Saints like Jack Loney, who was injured, interesting to see he's been selected. He must have come up okay. But Jack Billings looked young and small. Jack Sinclair, impressive type, look thin. And I think Carlton are big enough and experienced enough and should be desperate enough to get this win.
Yeah, look, an interesting way to look at it is, do you look at the first quarter from last week where St Kilda was so good against the Collingwood side who themselves played some good footy, or do you take the final three quarters? Well, I guess that's whether you're the glass half full or half empty. For me, I really like what I saw in the first quarter. Collingwood are the best team in the comp at being able to restrict teams going from one end to the other. So going from outside rebound 50 to inside 50. Melbourne are the best at restricting the score, but Collingwood are the best at actually stopping that from going from one arc to the other. Carlton are the worst, by far the worst. So they're going to get chalk and cheese. They're getting a good defensive team on the exit last week in Collingwood and a really poor defensive team in Carlton this week. So the options will open up for them. And maybe it was the clash of jumpers last week. They were very similar jumpers with the stripes, so that they won't run into that this week.
We've had some jumper clashes this season. GWS tend to clash with most teams, but I don't like watching GWS Sydney. It's a blur of orange and whites, and I think we can do better with clashing jumpers. That's not going to be a reason for my tipping Carlton or your tipping.
I might go the Saints. Just. Yeah,
there's a clash, but not a jumper clash.
Just.
Somebody's asked for those odds again. No worries, Paul. St Kilda, $3.05. Carlton, $1.38. We're going to save Essendon and Collingwood till after the news. But let's have a look at the two most recent additions to the class, the youngest alumni, GWS, taking on the Gold Coast.
League teams, GWS Giants.
We're the greats of Western Sydney Giants. We're the biggest.
The Gold Coast Suns.
We are the sons of the Gold Coast Sky.
Call them what you will, expansion teams, franchise teams, newbies, favoured children of the AFL parentage. Like them, loathe them, they are bloody interesting, and they meet each other this week in a far different state that many would have had them at the start of the season. GWS 2-1, Gold Coast 0-3. Let's have a look at the home team, the Giants. From the back line, Thomas Bugfield, Davis Heathshaw, a centre line of Nick Haynes, Joel Patful, and Aidan Corr. Centre line, Devon Smith, Callan Ward, Tom Scully. Half forward line, Josh Kelly, Cam McCarthy, Adam Treloar. Full forwards of Reece Palmer, Jeremy Cameron, Ryan Griffin. The ruck division, Shane Mumford, Dylan Scheel, Toby Green. The interchange, Lockie Whitfield, Nathan Wilson, Stephen Cornelio and James Stewart. The emergencies are Matt Bunteen, Andrew Phillips and Zach Williams. Jenny Stewart comes in for Andrew Phillips. Omitted.
And for the 0-3 Gold Coast Suns, from the back line, Trent McKenzie, Stephen May and Sean Lemons. The half-back line of Adam Sard, Rory Thompson and Sebastian Tape. The centre line, Cade Kolejczyk, Dion Prestia and Nick Malcheski. Half-forwards, Aaron Hall, Tom Lynch and Brandon Matera. The forward line, Tuke Miller, Charlie Dixon, Harley Bennell. The followers, Zach Smith, Michael Ricciatelli, David Swallow. On interchange, Jack Martin, Alex Sexton, Matt Shaw and Jared Garlett. The emergencies for Gold Coast, Henry Shade, Tom Nichols and Jesse Lonigan. The two ins are Charlie Dixon and Alex Sexton. Great to see Charlie Dixon back. The outs are Sam Day and Daniel Gorringe, both omitted.
I thought Sam Day was supposed to be a gun.
Daniel Gorringe too. They're both blokes who, at the crossroads of their career, they're very young careers, and that's something big to say early. They're 3 or 4 years in, but they need to start putting some runs on the board, those two boys.
Gorringe should go to GWS.
Gorringe and Orange?
That would be the look. The call team at Star Trek, we're back to Canberra, is Rob Waters and David Schwartz. It's a game that starts at 5:30 on Anzac Day. GWS $1.42, Gold Coast $2.85, and that seems to me good odds for Gold Coast, who played better last week. But Canberra can be a tricky ground, and I like the fact that GWS have a bit of a base there and have set roots there and were able to turn around a very bad first quarter against Melbourne and win there. So, this is something very important, by the way. So, let's do the summary, but I've just found out where you get these fantastic Sharon footballs from, and it's not Sharon or the AFL. So I'll give that information in a moment because we've had a few inquiries. I'm going to go with GWS on the basis of good form at that particular venue a couple of weeks ago and the dominant role that is being played this year by Mumford, and at the moment the less than formidable response that Zach Smith has provided in the ruck for the Gold Coast. Are rucks that important? Watch Mumford and what he can do in a game of football, and you'll see why Zach Smith has to remove Digit from rear orifice and get stuck in. Otherwise, Mumford will lead the way to a victory.
I think that's a really good point. I saw in round one, Mark Jamar had Zach Smith jumping at shadows in the end by the third quarter, and if he thinks that Mark Jamar is going to do that, Shane Mumford certainly is, because then Shane Mumford had his way with Mark Jamar 2 weeks ago. So I think GWS will win the game. I think it'll be tight because Gold Coast were pretty good last week and they're starting to find a little bit of form, but this GWS side I always thought was going to go past Gold Coast at some stage over the next few years. And it might have come a little bit earlier than expected.
Now, I thank Rod Loader. These Anzac footies are not available from AFL or Sharon. You can only get them from the Melbourne Shrine or online at anzacfooty.com.au. That is Anzac, capital letters for that famous acronym, footy, FOOTY.com.au. Easy to remember. Or at the Melbourne Shrine.
And we might get a photo actually and tweet it out during the break so you see what they look like.
Welcome back to the second half of League Teams. Brett Anderson from Inside Football. And go to Inside Football on the SEN website for player ratings. It has every player in the AFL and how they have performed, not just at AFL level, but at the secondary level. May that be the VFL, SANFL, WAFL, NEFL. If they've played, they are duly recognised. It is a wonderful service, and if you just want to know something about every player on the list of the team you follow, that's the place to go. This hour, we've got second half of League Teams, including a comprehensive look at the traditional Anzac Day clash, the big one between Collingwood and Essendon at the G. But Ian in Viewbank has called in. He called in prior to the news and patiently has waited on, or at least called back, and wants to talk about our fallen VC hero, Cameron Stewart-Baird, and of course, the forum, and the floor is his. Good evening, Ian.
Yes, good evening, Finey and Brett. Very much want to talk about, in the last hour, the previous hour with Ox and Marco.
With Doug Baird, Cameron's father, joining the boys?
Yeah, correct. I was listening in, and I was taken aback how a father could speak about his son so openly and honestly, and to me, it inspired the whole what Anzac Day actually is. And it wasn't until quite till the end that I realised it was Doug Baird that did play for Carlton, and he coached me at Brunswick in a few games, and he was...
He was Northcote's coach as well, I believe.
Yeah, he was an amazing man. I honestly didn't realise it was the same person that was talking, and it just struck me that technically that guy was the best coach I had in the couple of hundred games that I played. I only played under him briefly, but no doubt the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and his son would have been technically brilliant. And to do what he did and the way he spoke, to me, that just encompasses the whole Anzac spirit and what sport does for it.
Wonderful words. Thank you for making that contribution. Though it might mean slightly truncating our match reviews, it's timely to read of Cameron Stewart Baird. He played Tech Cup football, was a very promising footballer in his own right, but a shoulder injury meant that he was overlooked at a national draft, and that would be a fateful injury, as he realised he wouldn't have an AFL career ahead of him. He was, this is in Doug's words, his father's, he was in town one day and walked past a recruiting office and read some information and joined the army. Lance Corporal Cameron Stewart Baird was killed in action on June the 22nd, 2013, in Uruzgan, Afghanistan. And he received the Victoria Cross posthumously for the most conspicuous acts of valour, extreme devotion to duty and ultimate self-sacrifice. On three separate occasions, Corporal Baird charged an enemy-held building within the prepared compound. On the first occasion, he charged the door to the building, followed by another team member. Despite being totally exposed and immediately engaged by enemy fire, Corporal Baird pushed forward whilst firing into the building. Now in the closest proximity to the enemy, he was forced to withdraw when his rifle ceased to function. On rectifying his rifle stoppage and relocating remaining ammunition within his team, Corporal Baird again advanced towards the door of the building, once more under heavy fire. He engaged the enemy through the door but was unable to suppress the position and took cover to reload. Now for a third time, Corporal Baird selflessly drew enemy fire away from his team and assaulted the doorway. Enemy fire was seen to strike the ground and compound walls around Corporal Baird before visibility was obscured by dust and smoke. In this third attempt, the enemy was neutralised and the advantage was regained, but Corporal Baird was killed in the effort. Corporal Baird's acts of valour and self-sacrifice regained the initiative and preserved the lives of his team members. His actions were of the highest order and in keeping with the finest traditions of the Australian Army and the Australian Defence Force. Lance Corporal Cameron Stewart Baird, 1981 to 2013, is one of this nation's great heroes. Be you one who sees war as a futile pursuit or an opportunity and a theatre and a platform for great acts of bravery. However you view war, you can only view Cameron Stewart Baird one way, and that is with the utmost admiration and the utmost gratitude. 1 minute silence by the Steel Springs.
One minute silence, lest we forget. The Army Corps that went to war still haven't come home yet. 1 minute silence, don't serve us at the shrine. Keep still 25 alive. Remember those who did not survive. 1 minute silence, but we are young and free. Went to fight to uphold our rights, landed at Gallipoli. 1 minute silence, but we are young and free. 1 minute silence, but we are young and free. We love our island, safe in the South Seas. Some call us lucky as we can be. Some say it's beautiful, almost heavenly. Because the Anzacs sure that it would be. One minute silence, gunfire lights the sky. It's not surprising they played two up on a slide. Have a beer if you're near, an RSL. We're a man proud of your lapel. Spare a thought for those who endured hell. 1 minute silence, preserve the legacy for diggers and their families. Respect their memories. 1 minute silence, for we are young and free.
Spare a moment's silence for me. I was once like you, young and free. Your future is my history. Lest we forget.
1 minute silence, lest we forget. The army called that went to war, still haven't come home yet.
1 minute silence by the Steel Springs, featuring Tex Perkins with the voice of Ron Barassi, and of course Ron Barassi Sr., the father of Ronald Dale Barassi, made the ultimate sacrifice at Tobruk, I believe, in the Second World War. That song, written by Richard Gillard and Matthew Hardy, is available on iTunes. All profits will go to Legacy. We have a in-studio one-off Sharon. Magnificent centenary of Anzac Day football, available through anzacfooty.com.au or from the Melbourne Shrine, with all proceeds from that going to the Melbourne Shrine.
One of just 1,000 too, so there's not that many of them.
All of these, of course, are ways to make a financial contribution. Both of those are ways to make a financial contribution on and around Anzac Day. But thought and retrospection and respectful remembrance is another great way to mark the day. We are going to take a break, and then Essendon Collingwood, a huge feature of Anzac Day in Melbourne, in this country, will be the next team and game, teams and games for discussion on League Teams.
Because they are amazing.
When we come back, a magnificent song by Matthew Hardy that was written by he and Richard Gillard, performed by Tex Perkins and Ron Barassi. 1 minute silence, and another opportunity to be not only respectful on Anzac Day, but also generous. After the news, 1 minute silence, a song, and then all of the rest of League Teams.
League Teams, Essendon.
See the Bombers fly up, up to win the premiership flag.
Collingwood.
Good old Collingwood forever. They know how to play the game. Side by side.
So it will be at the MCG on Saturday at 2:40 p.m. that a packed house, 100,000 respectful but passionate fans, mainly Essendon Collingwood supporters, will see their famous teams do battle. Essendon's team is this from the back line. Mark Bagley, Dustin Fletcher, Jake Carlisle. Halfback line of Michael Hibberd. Cale Hooker, Martin Gleeson. Centre line of Brent Stanton, Joe Watson and Jake Melksham. Half forward line, Zach Merritt, Joe Danaher, Dyson Heppel. Full forwards are Patrick Ambrose, Michael Hurley and Brendan Goddard. The ruck division of Tom Bell Chambers, Paul Chapman and Travis Collier. Interchange sees Courtney Dempsey, Ben Howlett, David Zaharakis and Will Hams named. The emergencies of James Gwilt, Kyle Langford and Jackson Merritt. In, Courtney Dempsey and Will Hams. Out, Adam Cooney with a hamstring injury and Jason Ashby omitted.
The Collingwood Football Club from the back line, Alan Tuvey, Nathan Brown and Marley Williams. The halfback line of Tom Langdon, Jack Frost and Jackson Ramsey. The centre line, Travis Varko, Dane Swan and Jack Crisp. The half forwards are Jamie Elliott, Jesse White and Tim Broomhead. In the forward line is Tyson Goldsack, Travis Cloak and Jared Blair. The followers, Brodie Grundy, Taylor Adams, Scott Pendlebury. On the interchange, Sam Dwyer, Paul Seedsman, Adam Oxley and Corey Galt. The emergencies for Collingwood are Darcy Moore, Patrick Karnitsis and Jordan Degoe. Just the one change for the Pies, Taylor Adams into the team and Patrick Karnitsis is omitted.
If you want an opportunity to win this fantastic Anzac Day limited edition Sharon football, $295 value there, you need to be a caller because our best caller from the first and second hour will be the recipient. So give us a call, Essendon and Collingwood fans. The odds, sportsbet.com.au, mark Essendon at $1.40, Collingwood at $2.95. Our call team is Matt Granlund and Kevin Bartlett. Scott Lucas, special comments, and maybe, and I believe, a big name, possibly coach from another team might be in the box as well or something like that, but there'll be another big name, believe you me.
That's the boundary rider, isn't it?
That's the biggest name of all, Brett Anderson. And there will be a pre-game from 1:40, so a full hour preview after Carlton v or St Kilda v Carlton. SM Collingwood, I'll go first, and I'll say that the Bombers, I expect to win in a cracking game of football. Look, Collingwood needed last week. They needed some self-belief into their young players. And for Tim Broomhead and for the likes of Seedsman, Corey Galt, Adam Oxley, young Ramsey, to take this very big stage, this grand final in the middle of April or the end of April. Of course, it's not a grand final. It's just 4 points. But I'm talking about the crowd and the build-up and the standing on the ground, the minute silence, the pre-match entertainment is all very un-home and away-like. So for those young people, to young footballers, to come into that match or this match with a sense of not only confidence but of belief was very important. And they needed not only to beat St Kilda but play well in the game. And the good news for Collingwood was it was a very even spread. Of course, Swan and Pendlebury, as usual, 1 and 2, but I don't think they had a bad player or a player that won't derive some benefit from the game. That being said, their body size might have been able to counter the Saints quite comfortably, but then they will come up against a bigger, meaner player-on-player proposition with Essendon. When Essendon's younger players are the likes of Ambrose, Merritt, you know that you're playing against big hombres. They've got to counter a midfield with Watson, Heppel and Goddard. And I'm happy to say Watson and Heppel, Swan and Pendlebury. That is, you know, WWF tag team super match of the year. That's, what was their big WrestleManias?
WrestleMania, Royal Rumble.
The Royal Rumble. That's your Royal Rumble stuff.
A-Rod all over that out the front. He's just getting excited.
But beyond the highlighted matchup of those four, Essendon then run deep with Goddard, with
Stanton,
with Stanton's run, Zaharakis, and the ever-improving Collier. And whilst Collingwood do have some young promise there, Jack Crisp, not the least of which, and good to have Adams back, I think Essendon bat deeper there, and Essendon's back line is almost the cornerstone of their football, and I think from there Collingwood will derive very limited opportunities up front. Give me Essendon in this one, please, sir.
I'm on a very similar thought pattern to you, Finney. I think you've summed it up perfectly, the way that this game will go. We've seen in the past clubs who probably aren't expected to make the eight or aren't in that range of their progression as footy clubs sort of treat these big games. And I'm talking about Melbourne with Queen's Birthday. That's their grand final. People say that's Melbourne's grand final. It's what they build themselves up to. Well, I see Collingwood as that sort of developing side who this can be their grand final for some of their kids and really get themselves up for this week. Look, that's not to write them off for the rest of the year. They've started the season quite well, but I still think they're going to fall short in terms of making the eight. But they can gain a lot out of this game for their youngsters in terms of experience and what it's like to play on such a big occasion. I think they'll rise to it, but I still think Essendon will win the game.
So there you have it, two Essendon tips. Let's move on now to the next two games, which are, at the moment, nominally top four type of stuff. Of course, we don't know what the future holds, and Adelaide, Port Adelaide need to get a foothold, but these games, Port Adelaide, Hawthorn and Fremantle, Sydney, are huge games, and let's kick it off in South Australia with Port Adelaide and the Hawks.
League teams, Port Adelaide.
We've got the power to win, power to rule. Come on, Port Adelaide.
Hawthorn.
We're a happy team at Hawthorn. We're the mighty fighting horse. We love our club and we play to win.
7:10 Australian Central Time. Make the half-hour adjustment. Port Adelaide take on Hawthorn at Adelaide Oval. Port Adelaide will, if there are no late changes, run on to Adelaide Oval with these men. A back line of Jack Homsch, Alapati Carline and Jackson Trengove. Half back line Jasper Pittard, Tom Jonas, Matthew Broadbent. The centre line, Jared Pollock, Brad Ebert and Kane Mitchell. Half forward line says Robbie Gray, Justin Westhoff and Chad Wingard, while the remaining full forward line is Patrick Ryder, Jay Schultz and Matt White. Ruckman, Matthew Lobe, Travis Boak, Hamish Hartlett. Interchange, Nathan Cracker, Aaron Young, Angus Monfries and Kane Corns. The emergencies are Brendan Archie, Jake Need and Paul Stewart. In comes Matthew Lobe and Kane Corns. Out, Ollie Wines with that broken wrist and an omission of first game of last week, Brendan Archie.
The Hawthorn 22 reads as this from the back line: Sean Burgoyne, Brian Lake, Taylor Duray. The half back line of Grant Birchall, Josh Gibson and Ben Stratton. The centre line, Isaac Smith, Sam Mitchell and Matt Suckling. Half forwards are Will Langford, Jack Gunston and Bradley Hill. The forward line, Luke Bruce, Jared Ruffhead, Cyril Rioli. The rucks, John Segler, Luke Hodge and Jordan Lewis, both had on a string last week. The interchange of Brendan Whitecross, Ben McAvoy, Paul Puopolo, Billy Hartung. The emergencies are Ryan Schoenmakers, Jonathan Simpkin and Jed Anderson. Just the one change for the Hawks. Bradley Hill back in after that concussion suffered against the Bombers. And Jed Anderson is an unlucky omission.
Hawthorn $1.62. Now, those odds can't be right. I'm not going to read those out. They can't be $1.62 each of two.
$1.62, Port Adelaide $2.30.
That makes more sense. So Port Adelaide, now I've read it better. Port Adelaide $2.30, Hawthorn, pardon me, $1.62, because Frio is also $1.62. We'll get to that in a moment. Hawthorn are the clear favourites. Jed Anderson, you are playing for a very good team if you've been omitted, son. Over to you, Bretto, for a predictory preview of the game.
First off, I think Hawthorn will win the game, and that's based on the fact that Ollie Wines is out of the side, and against Hawthorn, you need to be really strong in close with your ability to win the ball. That's where they do their best work with Luke Hodge and Jordan Lewis and the like. And the other one is there's a bit of a doubt over Matt White with his ankle. Now, he gives the outside run for Port Adelaide, which they really becomes crucial against the Hawks. We saw it against with Essendon, the way that they were able to spread them on the outside and really match them, I guess, in that aspect of the game. Without Matt White there, who can also go forward and kick a goal, I think that would leave a bit of a hole if he was to miss, especially when you consider that Bradley Hill comes back into the side for Hawthorn. So that would be a strength coming back in for the Hawks and taking it away from Port Adelaide. Look, Ollie Wines, my mail is that he might even miss up to 8 weeks, a little bit more than 4 to 6 as they're mentioning, which would be a bit of a blow. But look, Hawthorn are a very good footy side. They've got a good record against Port Adelaide, and whilst Port are going to be a top four side by the end of the year, I just don't think that they've got it right now in terms of their form to beat the Hawks.
I'm going to go for Port Adelaide in this one. In an upset, no question. And there's no reason why one would tip against Hawthorn, especially because there will be times during the year where Hawthorn will not be pressed into 100% grand final or finals type football. This is not one of those times. I think Hawthorn would be marking this game against a not only opponent, but a team that is looking to topple them from the seat of power that they currently hold. I mean, Port Adelaide went pretty close to denying Hawthorn a spot in last year's grand final. They'd be looking to impress upon them, that is Hawthorn, the strict, you know, the most obvious and if at all possible for Hawthorn, debilitating of lessons. They want to put space between them and Port Adelaide, but they won't at Adelaide Oval because Port Adelaide showed great resolve in winning last week. They were again pitted with a desperate opponent on their own dung heap. They had Sydney in round one. Pardon me. They had Fremantle in round one. What tougher assignment can you have at the moment? The Freo over there.
They've had a tough 4 weeks, haven't they, when you look at the schedule?
They might have misread the tea leaves a bit against Sydney, and then they're up against it against North, who had to win and love playing at Etihad. And with things just rolling, tilting towards a North Melbourne win, Port dug very, very deep, and I liked it. But the thing I like most is that in that last quarter, we saw exactly why they got Paddy Ryder. They didn't get him to ruck. They got him to help in the ruck. They got him for that beautiful mark. He missed the kick of
he
goal.
He did miss, yep.
But that's a hard man to match up on. And that clears Schultz for less attention. And that can mark Westhoff for a greater impact. And I think Lobe in the team is immeasurably valuable.
We're going to get our first look, aren't we, with Lobe and Ryder in the one side. So that will be interesting to see how it works out.
I'm tipping a rip-roaring success. And Port Adelaide to win by the narrowest of margins.
The thing with Ryder is I don't think the Hawthorn defenders will allow him clear jumps at the footy like he got last week. That's the one thing. I think Paddy Ryder's a very good player when he gets that clear run at a ball. When he's body on body, not so good. So that'll be one key aspect for Hawthorn. I thought Port Adelaide last week when they didn't. The first quarter they basically played without a forward line. Jay Schultz was getting right up to the wing and half back, and they're getting the ball on the wing and turning around. There's actually no one there. Matt White did it a few times on a fast play and then kicked it to the opposition. If they can keep forwards inside 50, that's when they look their most dangerous. And I don't think you can take your forward line, especially someone like Jay Schultz, out of the 50 against Hawthorn and have success. He needs to sit deep, and he needs Chad Wingard, and he needs Justin Westhoff to fire up, because I thought he was pretty quiet last week.
I'm going for Port Sport. You're going for the
Hawthorn, but just in a cracker.
So let's complete this amazing Anzac Day. Remember, on 11:16 SEN, it starts at 10 past 11 with the Saints and the Blues. Then Essendon Collingwood, commencing at 2:40, but with a full hour preview. Then GWS Gold Coast, 5:30 to 8:30, while you eat your Chinese takeaway. And then finish off on Saturday night by tuning into Tim Gossage and Ben Allen calling this one, Fremantle v Sydney.
League teams, Fremantle. The Sydney Swans.
Here, here, the red and the white. Honour the name by day and by night.
I still strongly suggest you ring in 94291116. We've got this beautiful $300 football limited edition Sharon Anzac Day Centenary limited edition, and all the calls have been in the first hour, so if you're ringing in the second hour, you must give yourself an enormous chance. 94291116, because this game's all in the interpretation. If I could get Braden, would you be able to cut a call that Terry Wallace and Daniel Harford took this afternoon? They were asking who was the best interstate team, and there was a caller who thought Sydney was, and I thought his arguments were compelling. Let's have a listen to the Sydney team as it reads tonight. Oh, no, we'll go Fremantle first. They're the home team, and they're playing at Domain Stadium, which is, of course, the old Patterson's, which is Subiaco. From the back line, Gaddick, Ibbotson, Michael Johnson, Nick Subin. Half back line. That was the half back line. This is awkward. We'll start now with the back line. Cameron Sutcliffe, Luke McFarlane, Clancy Pierce. Half back line, Ibbotson, Johnson and Subin, as previously mentioned. Centre line of Paul Duffield, Nat Fife and Matt DeBoer. Half forward line of Daniel Pierce, Matthew Pavlich and Matt Tabiner. The forward line of Zach Clark, Chris Mayne and Michael Walters. Even though there's a question mark, he is expected to play. Ruck division of Aaron Sanderlands, David Mundy and Stephen Hill. interchange. Michael Barlow, Lockie Neal, Lee Sperintendo Mzungu, the emergencies of Jack Hanneth, Tommy Sheridan, almost Tommy Sheridan, and Alex Pearce in Tendai Mzungu, out Hayden Crozier, omitted.
For Sydney, from the back line, Dane Rampey, Ted Richards and Nick Smith. The halfbacks are Jeremy Laidler, Heath Grundy and Reece Shaw. The centre line of Craig Bird, Josh Kennedy and Kieran Jack. The forwards half forward line is Jared McVeigh, Lance Franklin, Isaac Heaney. The forward line of Lewis Jetta, Kurt Tippett and Sam Reid. The followers, Mike Pike, Dan Hannabury and Luke Parker. On the interchange bench, Harry Cunningham, Jake Lloyd, Ben McGlynn and Gary Rowan. The emergencies are Jack Hiscox, Sam Naismith and Dean Towers. Again, just the one change. Nick Smith comes into the side after missing last week and Dean Towers is the unlucky omission.
That is an unlucky omission, but in good teams, these things do happen, don't they?
They do. Look, their depth is, I think it runs about 26 deep, Sydney. From there on, they get a bit thin when you look through their Neufel side, but certainly their top 26 is very strong.
Off the SMS, how is Port any different to Geelong? Geelong has played better teams and did the same as Port did against North. Against Gold Coast. No, they haven't played better teams.
No. Well, Port's played the best four sides from last year outside of that, and Geelong have played...
Well, they haven't played Hawthorn yet, but they've played Frio and Frio. That's a... Whoever set that in? Now, come on, pal. Frio and Frio, Sydney at home, and North Melbourne at Etihad, as compared to Geelong, who played Hawthorn at the G, Fremantle at Simmons and Gold Coast at Simmons. They've had
a horribly out of form Gold Coast.
They've had two, and they squeaked against Gold Coast. They've had two games at Simmons and one at the MCG, arguably three home games in a way. So playing Frio in Frio and North at Etihad, either you're a Geelong supporter or a Port hater, but either way, I ain't buying what you're selling.
Fortnight ago, we had some defensive Geelong supporters when I was on, and it might be the case again. Yeah. Calm down, Cats fans. You're in a transition period. We know how good you've been. You don't need to sell it to us.
Yeah, it's brave to the end. Let's get to John in Narre Warren. Good evening, John.
Hi, guys. How are you going?
I'm well.
I'm actually a Cats fan, but I'm getting used to the fact watching Fremantle and Sydney and all these great football that we get to watch, and without the emotion, I guess, of watching Geelong all the time.
You had a good you had a very good run, mate. Just enjoy.
We'll both swap you for our clubs.
Well, enjoy the younger men coming through and
be comfortable
in the knowledge you were one of the best ever.
That's it.
I was actually calling in regards to Fremantle, and I think this is the last chance for a flag this year with McFarlane, Pavlich and Sandilands.
Yep.
I think we saw it last year. They got injuries and they dropped down a little bit. So Pavlich, McFarlane got injured last year. Sandilands was injured.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think you're right. McFarlane.
The back six is really important. McFarlane is the linchpin of that.
He's a champion. He's 34 this year, isn't he?
And you know what? He probably is a champion. And you don't really equate that word to Luke McFarlane. But when you watch him playing, what he does for that side in a very good team, he is so important. You throw Michael Johnson there, who had his injury issues last year. Gary Gibbetson as well. Those three. And you got to remember, Zach Dawson isn't in this side at the moment.
Are they better? Look, a lot of people have spoken about Fremantle being better off without Ryan Crowley because... Take that ultra-defensive player out of the midfield and you've got a more creative midfield.
You do, as long as you're getting that defensive accountability as well, which Clancy Pearce is providing at the moment.
Well, they say Clancy can, you know, go to a tight lockdown if needed. He won't do it as well as Ryan. But there's no doubt with Ryan at most stoppages, because that's where his direct opponent is, that inhibits the number of creative players at the stoppage. Take a centre bounce. You're not going to have Barlow, Mundy and Fife in many centre bounces if Crowley has to be there shoulder to shoulder with an opponent who's a centre bouncer. So, the question then is, that's been discussed, I think, fairly comprehensively in various forms of the media, but I think their backline's better off without Zach Dawson. Zach Dawson's a very good fullback, but he's...
What does he give you going the other way?
Nothing. He can kick, but he's... probably the lowest possession footballer in the competition.
He wouldn't be far off.
He'd be pretty close to the lowest possession.
Nick Natanui wouldn't be far behind at the moment.
But, you know, week in, week out, Zach Dawson is required to get no possessions. Now, he's a great defender. And, of course, Ross Lyon loves role players. And maybe his hand has been forced somewhat. But he might look at this team and say, you know what, without a blanketing stopper and a... totally defensive backman, I found the two or three more goals a week that I need.
Ultimately, Ross has gone to the well with a similar setup so many times through when he was at St Kilda and Fremantle, and maybe the Crowley thing has been a blessing in disguise, as you say, finally, that there's only so many times you can go to that well and realise that it's not working and then try something different. So the fact that Pierce has come in and maybe Dawson out of the side's given that slightly different mix, and it has at the moment provided more scores on the scoreboard. Look, they fade out in the second half. I don't think you read much into that. The game was well and truly won at halftime. Josh Kennedy for Sydney's one who he didn't make the trip over so far to Perth, but he will be heading over. His partner just had a baby in the last few days, but he will be playing for the Swans, which is ultra important. Look, they're two very good footy sides, and I think we're going to see a cracker on Saturday night. Ooh, trying to pick a winner in this one. Ooh, Frio.
It's a very close call, isn't it? This game has matchups to beat the band. The midfields are both super powerful.
Try and find a weakness in these two sides.
I lean towards Frio's midfield because it's playing so well and it's powerful and big. And Lachie Neal has added to the mix. Pavlich is providing something down forward that we didn't expect. And certainly Walters and Hayden Ballantyne together are fantastic. But the problem for Fremantle is there's no Ballantyne and there's a question of Walters. And therein lies a problem.
That is the problem. Michael Walters, for me, is nearly their most important player.
Yeah, I'm tipping Sydney. You see, they don't bother about travelling. They are... Your instinct says they're both great. I'll go with the home team. Just look what Sydney did in Port Adelaide. Sydney have only lost one game out of their last 18, I think.
It was an important one to lose, though.
Well, it's
it's the one that everyone remembers.
But it was one game.
Yep.
It's pretty good record.
It is a good record.
They're brilliant, Sydney. I'm tipping Sydney in this.
No, Frio just for me, but look, if Walters is out, I reserve the right to change my tip because he is so important in that front half. And we saw that through last season. When he came back into the side, he gave him a real spark.
Frio the favourites. They're $1.62, $2.30 for Sydney. I like the Swans in this one. Let's go. And by the way, John, that is an excellent call because time is ticking for Fremantle, and it might tick this year. As much as they look great now, they need McFarlane and they need Pavlich, and they are both players whose bodies are great now, but do we guarantee them 22 games and finals in this condition?
Well, that's it. And McFarlane, I think he even said a couple of weeks ago, his wife expected him to retire and he had to talk her around going around again. So you'd expect at the end of this year he's gone. So they've got one shot at this Frio, and this is going to be their best shot in a long time this year.
Let's go to Luke at Naruma. Good evening, Luke.
Hey, boys. How you going?
Very well.
Just wanted to ask, thinking about this weekend, it was Saturday night, what a cracker. It's my top four this year, all playing in the space of a couple of hours. I just think, do you think John Longmire will kick himself for playing Goodsy in the reserves again this week if Sydney had to fall 10 points short, like I think they will? Goods hasn't been there to pop up for his cameo two or three goals.
The reason he's playing him there is because he believes there are better men for the job at the moment. Yeah, if they lost, you'd certainly think what Goods could have done that somebody else wouldn't have done in a losing team, but that is called hindsight, and if we had hindsight, we'd all be geniuses. In fact, if some people don't need hindsight, some people need eyesight, including the woman who drove straight into the back of me today while I was stopped at the lights on Glen Huntly Road.
Goods in the reserves.
They lost to Richmond, sorry.
They did.
That is spot
round
on.
Round 23.
So about 2 in 18? Absolutely.
They do. Goods in the reserves last week, 3 goals, 20 possessions, opposed to Jack Steele most of the day. Only Kirtley Hampton had a go on him. They played against GWS, lost quite comfortably. So he's probably not in the greatest touch yet, Adam. You like him in there because of his experience, but look, he's out at the moment, and that's just the way it's going to stay.
Now we're going, after the break, to have a look at the 3 Sunday games. We just gives the ins and outs for the Sunday games as those squads are yet to be completed. But today on Half Time, Half and Plough, Terry Wallace, we're taking calls on who's the best interstate side in the comp. Now, I'm not sure of the name of this caller, but I'll tell you this. A Sydney caller rang in with an argument that on the scale of 1 to 100 for compelling would have to rate a negative 7. I hope his footy team, well, I know his footy team is better than he is at debating, but this is to somebody that wasn't willing to answer a question.
Let's see what our listeners think, who they nominate the best interstate side and why. Pete's in Mitcham. G'day, Pete.
How you going, fellas?
Going well.
Sydney.
Why?
It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Well, no, I don't think it is. That's why we're asking you why.
Oh, well, I reckon it's a no-brainer. I reckon it's a done deal.
Yeah, well, why?
Anyone can say no-brainer. Give me a reason.
What's the reasons why they are so much stronger than anyone else?
Forward line, back line, on ballers, the whole team.
League teams, Essendon.
See the ballers fly up, up to win the premiership flag.
Collingwood.
Good old Collingwood forever. They know how to play the game. Side by
side. So it will be at the MCG on Saturday at 2:40 p.m. that a packed house, 100,000. Respectful but passionate fans, mainly Essendon and Collingwood supporters, will see their famous teams do battle. Essendon's team is this from the back line. Mark Bagley, Dustin Fletcher, Jake Carlisle. Halfback line of Michael Hibberd. Cale Hooker, Martin Gleeson. Centre line of Brent Stanton, Joe Watson and Jake Melchin. Half forward line, Zach Merritt, Joe Danaher, Dyson Heppel. Full forwards are Patrick Ambrose, Michael Hurley and Brendan Goddard. The ruck division of Tom Bell Chambers, Paul Chapman and Travis Collier. Interchange sees Courtney Dempsey, Ben Howlett, David Zaharakis and Will Hams named. The emergencies of James Gwilt, Kyle Langford and Jackson Merritt. In, Courtney Dempsey and Will Hams out. Adam Cooney with a hamstring injury and Jason Ashby omitted.
The Collingwood Football Club from the back line, Alan Tuvey, Nathan Brown and Marley Williams. The halfback line of Tom Langdon, Jack Frost and Jackson Ramsey. The centre line, Travis Varko, Dane Swan and Jack Crisp. The half forwards are Jamie Elliott, Jesse White and Tim Broomhead. In the forward line is Tyson Goldsack, Travis Cloak and Jared Blair. The followers, Brody Grundy, Taylor Adams, Scott Pendlebury. On the interchange, Sam Dwyer, Paul Seedsman, Adam Oxley and Corey Galt. The emergencies for Collingwood are Darcy Moore, Patrick Karnitsis and Jordan Degoe. Just the one change for the Pies, Taylor Adams into the team and Patrick Karnitsis is omitted.
If you want an opportunity to win this fantastic Anzac Day Limited Edition Sharon Football, $295 value there, you need to be a caller because our best caller from the first and second hour will be the recipient. So give us a call, Essendon and Collingwood fans. The odds, sportsbet.com.au, mark Essendon at $1.40, Collingwood at $2.95. Our call team is Matt Granlund and Kevin Bartlett, Scott Lucas special comments, and maybe, and I believe, a big name, possibly coach from another team might be in the box as well or something like that, but there'll be another big name, believe you me.
That's the boundary rider, isn't it?
That's the biggest name of all, Brett Anderson. And there will be a pre-game from 1:40, so a full hour preview after Carlton v or St Kilda v Carlton. Essendon Collingwood, I'll go first, and I'll say that the Bombers I expect to win in a cracking game of football. Look, Collingwood needed last week; they needed some self-belief into their young players, and for Tim Broomhead and for the likes of Seedsman, Corey Galt, Adam Oxley, young Ramsey to take this very big stage, this grand final in the middle of April or the end of April. Of course, it's not a grand final, it's just 4 points, but I'm talking about the crowd and the build-up and the standing on the ground, the minute silence, the pre-match entertainment is all very un-home and away-like. So for those young people, young footballers, to come into that match or this match with a sense of not only confidence, but of belief was very important, and they needed not only to beat St Kilda but play well in the game. And the good news for Collingwood was it was a very even spread. Of course, Swan and Pendlebury, as usual, were 1 and 2, but I don't think they had a bad player or a player that won't derive some benefit from the game. That being said, their body size might have been able to counter the Saints quite comfortably, but then they will come up against a bigger, meaner player-on-player proposition with Essendon. When Essendon's younger players are the likes of Ambrose, Merritt,
you know that you're playing against big hombres. They've got to counter a midfield with Watson, Heppel and Goddard. And I'm happy to say Watson and Heppel, Swan and Pendlebury. That is, you know, WWF tag team super match of the year. That's, what was their big WrestleManias?
WrestleMania, Royal Rumble.
The Royal Rumble. That's your Royal Rumble stuff.
A-Rod all over that out the front. He's just getting excited.
But beyond the highlighted matchup of those four, Essendon then run deep with Goddard, with
Stanton.
With Stanton's run, Zaharakis, and the ever-improving Collier. And whilst Collingwood do have some young promise there, Jack Crisp, not the least of which, and good to have Adams back, I think Essendon bat deeper there, and Essendon's back line is almost the cornerstone of their football, and I think from there Collingwood will derive very limited opportunities up front. Give me Essendon in this one, please, sir.
I'm on a very similar thought pattern to you, Finney. I think you've summed it up perfectly, the way that this game will go. We've seen in the past clubs who probably aren't expected to make the eight or aren't in that range of their progression as footy clubs sort of treat these big games. And I'm talking about Melbourne with Queen's Birthday. That's their grand final. People say that's Melbourne's grand final. It's what they build themselves up to. Well, I see Collingwood as that sort of developing side who this can be their grand final for some of their kids and really get themselves up for this week. Look, that's not to write them off for the rest of the year. They've started the season quite well, but I still think that they're going to fall short in terms of making the eight. But they can gain a lot out of this game for their youngsters in terms of experience and what it's like to play on such a big occasion. I think they'll rise to it, but I still think Essendon will win the game.
So there you have it, two Essendon tips. Let's move on now to the next two games, which are, at the moment, nominally top four type of stuff. Of course, we don't know what the future holds, and Port Adelaide need to get a foothold, but these games, Port Adelaide, Hawthorn and Fremantle, Sydney, are huge games, and let's kick it off in South Australia with Port Adelaide and the Hawks.
League teams, Port Adelaide.
We've got the power to win, power to grow. Come on, Port Adelaide.
Hawthorn.
We're a happy team at Hawthorn. We're the mighty fighting horse. We love our club and we play to win.
7:10 Australian Central Time. Make the half-hour adjustment. Port Adelaide take on Hawthorn at Adelaide Oval. Port Adelaide will, if there are no late changes, run onto Adelaide Oval with these men. A back line of Jack Homsch, Alapati Carline and Jackson Trengove. Half back line, Jasper Pittard, Tom Jonas, Matthew Broadbent. The centre line, Jared Pollock, Brad Ebert and Kane Mitchell. Half forward line says Robbie Gray, Justin Westhoff and Chad Wingard, while the remaining full forward line is Patrick Ryder, Jay Schultz and Matt White. Ruckman, Matthew Lobie, Travis Boak, Hamish Hartlett. Interchange, Nathan Cracker, Aaron Young, Angus Monfries and Kane Corns. The emergencies are Brendan Archie, Jake Need and Paul Stewart. In comes Matthew Lobie and Kane Corns. Out, Ollie Wines with that broken wrist and an omission of first game of last week, Brendan Archie.
The Hawthorn 22 reads as this from the back line: Sean Burgoyne, Brian Lake, Taylor Duray. The half back line of Grant Birchall, Josh Gibson and Ben Stratton. The centre line, Isaac Smith, Sam Mitchell and Matt Suckling. Half forwards are Will Langford, Jack Gunston and Bradley Hill. The forward line, Luke Bruce, Jared Ruffhead, Cyril Rioli. The rucks, John Segler, Luke Hodge and Jordan Lewis, both had on a string last week. The interchange of Brendan Whitecross, Ben McAvoy, Paul Puopolo, Billy Hartung. The emergencies are Ryan Schoenmakers, Jonathan Simpkin and Jed Anderson. Just the one change for the Hawks. Bradley Hill back in after that concussion suffered against the Bombers. And Jed Anderson is an unlucky omission.
Hawthorn $1.62. Now, those odds can't be right. I'm not going to read those out. They can't be $1.62 each of two.
$1.62, Port Adelaide $2.30.
That makes more sense. So Port Adelaide, now I've read it better. Port Adelaide $2.30, Hawthorn, pardon me, $1.62, because Frio is also $1.62. We'll get to that in a moment. Hawthorn are the clear favourites. Jed Anderson, you are playing for a very good team if you've been omitted, son. Over to you, Bretto, for a predictory preview of the game.
First of all, I think Hawthorn will win the game, and that's based on the fact that Ollie Wines is out of the side, and against Hawthorn, you need to be really strong in close with your ability to win the ball. That's where they do their best work with Luke Hodge and Jordan Lewis and the like. And the other one is there's a bit of a doubt over Matt White with his ankle. Now, he gives the outside run for Port Adelaide, which they really becomes crucial against the Hawks. We saw it against with Essendon, the way that they were able to spread them on the outside and really match them, I guess, in that aspect of the game. Without Matt White there, who can also go forward and kick a goal, I think that would leave a bit of a hole if he was to miss, especially when you consider that Bradley Hill comes back into the side for Hawthorn. So that would be a strength coming back in for the Hawks and taking it away from Port Adelaide. Look, Ollie Wines, my mail is that he might even miss up to 8 weeks, a little bit more than 4 to 6 as they're mentioning, which would be a bit of a blow. But look, Hawthorn are a very good footy side. They've got a good record against Port Adelaide, and whilst Port are going to be a top four side by the end of the year, I just don't think that they've got it right now in terms of their form to beat the Hawks.
I'm going to go for Port Adelaide in this one. In an upset, no question. And there's no reason why one would tip against Hawthorn, especially because there will be times during the year where Hawthorn will not be pressed into 100% grand final or finals type football. This is not one of those times. I think Hawthorn would be marking this game against a not only opponent, but a team that is looking to topple them from the seat of power that they currently hold. I mean, Port Adelaide went pretty close to denying Hawthorn a spot in last year's grand final. They'd be looking to impress upon them, that is Hawthorn, the strict, you know, the most obvious and if at all possible for Hawthorn, debilitating of lessons. They want to put space between them and Port Adelaide, but they won't at Adelaide Oval because Port Adelaide showed great resolve in winning last week. They were again pitted with a desperate opponent on their own dung heap. They had Sydney in round one. Pardon me. They had Fremantle in round one. What tougher assignment can you have at the moment than Freo over there?
They've had a tough 4 weeks, haven't they, when you look at the schedule?
They might have misread the tea leaves a bit against Sydney. And then they're up against it against North, who had to win and love playing at Etihad. And with things just rolling, tilting towards a North Melbourne win, Port dug very, very deep, and I liked it. But the thing I like most is that in that last quarter, we saw exactly why they got Paddy Ryder. They didn't get him to ruck. They got him to help in the ruck. They got him for that beautiful marquee flow. He missed the kick of goal.
He did miss, yep.
But that's a hard man to match up on. And that clears Schultz for less attention, and that can mark Westhoff for a greater impact. And I think Lobie in the team is immeasurably valuable.
We're going to get our first look, aren't we, with Lobie and Ryder in the one side. So that will be interesting to see how it works out.
I'm tipping a rip-roaring success and Port Adelaide to win by the narrowest of margins.
The thing with Ryder is I don't think the Hawthorn defenders will allow him clear jumps at the footy like he got last week. That's the one thing. I think Paddy Ryder's a very good player when he gets that clear run at a ball. When he's body on body, not so good. So that'll be one key aspect for Hawthorn. Look, Port Adelaide last week, when they didn't, the first quarter they basically played without a forward line. Jay Schultz was getting right up to the wing and half back, and they're getting the ball on the wing and turning around. There's actually no one there. Matt White did it a few times on a fast play and then kicked it to the opposition. If they can keep forwards inside 50, that's when they look their most dangerous. And I don't think you can take your forward line, especially someone like Jay Schultz, out of the 50 against Hawthorn and have success. He needs to sit deep, and he needs Chad Wingard, and he needs Justin Westhoff to fire up, because I thought he was pretty quiet last week.
I'm going for Port Sport. You're going for the
Hawthorn, but just in a cracker.
So let's complete this amazing Anzac Day. Remember, on 11:16 SEN, it starts at 10 past 11 with the Saints and the Blues. Then Essendon Collingwood, commencing at 2:40, but with a full hour preview. Then GWS Gold Coast, 5:30 to 8:30, while you eat your Chinese takeaway. And then finish off on Saturday night by tuning into Tim Gossage and Ben Allen calling this one, Fremantle v Sydney.
League teams, Fremantle. The Sydney Swans.
Strongly suggest you ring in 9429 1116. We've got this beautiful $300 football limited edition Sharon Anzac Day centenary limited edition, and all the calls have been in the first hour. So if you're ringing in the second hour, you must give yourself an enormous chance. 9429 1116, because this game's all in the interpretation.
if I could get Braden, would you be able to cut a call that Terry Wallace and Daniel Harford took this afternoon? They were asking who was the best interstate team, and there was a caller who thought Sydney was, and I thought his arguments were compelling. Let's have a listen to the Sydney team as it reads tonight. Oh, no, we'll go Fremantle first. They're the home team, and they're playing at Domain Stadium, which is, of course, the old Patterson's, which is Subiaco. From the back line, Gaddick, Ibbotson, Michael Johnson, Nick Subin. Half back line. That was the half back line. This is awkward. We'll start now with the back line. Cameron Sutcliffe, Luke McFarlane, Clancy Pearce. Half back line, Ibbotson, Johnson and Subin, as previously mentioned. Centre line of Paul Duffield, Matt Fife and Matt DeBoer. Half forward line of Daniel Pearce, Matthew Pavlich and Matt Tabiner. The forward line of Zach Clark, Chris Mayne and Michael Walters. Even though there's a question mark, he's expected to play. Ruck division of Aaron Sanderlands, David Mundy and Stephen Hill. Interchange, Michael Barlow, Lockie Neal, Lee Spur and Tendo Mzungu. The emergencies of Jack Hanneth, Tommy Sheridan, almost Tommy Sheridan, and Alex Pearce in Tendai Mzungu. Out, Hayden Crozier omitted.
For Sydney, from the back line, Dane Rampey, Ted Richards and Nick Smith. The halfbacks are Jeremy Laidler, Heath Grundy and Reece Shaw. The centre line of Craig Bird, Josh Kennedy and Kieran Jack. The forwards half forward line is Jared McVeigh, Lance Franklin, Isaac Heaney. The forward line of Lewis Jetta, Kurt Tippett and Sam Reid. The followers, Mike Pike, Dan Hannabury and Luke Parker. On the interchange bench, Harry Cunningham, Jake Lloyd, Ben McGlynn and Gary Rowan. The emergencies are Jack Hiscox, Sam Naismith and Dean Towers. Again, just the one change. Nick Smith comes into the side after missing last week, and Dean Towers is the unlucky omission.
That is an unlucky omission, but in good teams, these things do happen, don't they?
They do. Look, their depth is, I think it runs about 26 deep, Sydney. From there on, they get a bit thin when you look through their Neufel side, but certainly their top 26 is very strong.
Off the SMS, how is Port any different to Geelong? Geelong has played better teams and did the same as Port did against North. Against Gold Coast. No, they haven't played better teams.
No. Well, Port's played the best four sides from last year outside of that, and Geelong have played...
Well, they haven't played Hawthorn yet, but they've played Frio and Frio. That's a... Whoever set that in? Now, come on, pal. Frio and Frio, Sydney at home, and North Melbourne at Etihad, as compared to Geelong, who played Hawthorn at the G, Fremantle at Simmons and Gold Coast at Simmons. They've had
a horribly out of form Gold Coast.
They've had two, and they squeaked against Gold Coast. They've had two games at Simmons and one at the MCG, arguably three home games in a way. So playing Frio in Frio and North at Etihad, either you're a Geelong supporter or a Port hater, but either way, I ain't buying what you're selling.
A fortnight ago, we had some defensive Geelong supporters when I was on, and it might be the case again. Yeah. Calm down, Cats fans. You're in a transition period. We know how good you've been. You don't need to sell it to us.
Yeah, it's brave to the end. Let's get John in Narre Warren. Good evening, John.
Hi, guys. How are you going?
I'm well.
I'm actually a Cats fan, but I'm getting used to the fact watching Fremantle and Sydney and all these great this great football that we get to watch, and without the emotion, I guess, of watching Geelong all the time.
You had a good run. You had a very good run, mate. Just enjoy.
We'll both swap you for our clubs.
Well, enjoy the younger men coming through, and
be comfortable
in the knowledge you were one of the best ever.
That's it.
I was actually calling in regards to Fremantle, and I think this is the last chance for the flag this year with McFarlane, Pavlich and Sanderlands.
Yep.
I think we saw it last year. They got injuries and they dropped down a little bit. So Pavlich, McFarlane got injured last year. Sanderlands was injured.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call.
I think this is, yeah. What do you think?
I think you're right. McFarlane.
The back six is really important. McFarlane is the linchpin of that.
He's a champion. He's 34 this year, isn't he?
And you know what? He probably is a champion. And you don't really equate that word to Luke McFarlane. But when you watch him playing, what he does for that side in a very good team, he is so important. You throw Michael Johnson there, who had his injury issues last year. Gary Gibbetson as well. Those three. And you got to remember, Zach Dawson isn't in this side at the moment. He's out
injured.
Are they better?
Look, a lot of people have spoken about Fremantle being better off without Ryan Crowley because...
Freeze them up a little bit.
Take that ultra-defensive player out of the midfield and you've got a more creative midfield.
You do, as long as you're getting that defensive accountability as well, which Clancy Pearce is providing at the moment.
Well, they say Clancy can, you know, go to a tight lockdown if needed. He won't do it as well as Ryan. But there's no doubt with Ryan at most stoppages, because that's where his direct opponent is,
inhibits the number of creative players at the stoppage. Take a centre bounce. You're not going to have Barlow, Mundy and Fife in many centre bounces if Crowley has to be there shoulder to shoulder with an opponent who's a centre bouncer. So the question then is, that's been discussed, I think, fairly comprehensively in various forms of the media, but I think their backline's better off without Zach Dawson. Zach Dawson's a very good fullback, but he's...
What does he give you going the other way?
Nothing. He can kick, but he's probably the lowest possession footballer in the competition.
He wouldn't be far off.
He'd be pretty close to the lowest possession.
Nick Natanui wouldn't be far behind at the moment.
But, you know, week in, week out, Zach Dawson is required to get no possessions. Now, he's a great defender, and, of course, Ross Lyon loves role players, and maybe his hand has been forced somewhat, but he might look at this team and say, you know what, without a blanketing stopper and a totally defensive backman, I found the two or three more goals a week that I need.
Ultimately, Ross has gone to the well with a similar setup so many times through when he was at St Kilda and Fremantle, and maybe the Crowley thing has been a blessing in disguise, as you say, finally, that there's only so many times you can go to that well and realise that it's not working and then try something different. So the fact that Pierce has come in and maybe Dawson out of the side's given that slightly different mix, and it has at the moment provided more scores on the scoreboard. Look, they fade out in the second half. I don't think you read much into that. The game was well and truly won at halftime. Josh Kennedy for Sydney's one who he didn't make the trip over so far to Perth, but he will be heading over. His partner just had a baby in the last few days, but he will be playing for the Swans, which is ultra important. Look, they're two very good footy sides, and I think we're going to see a cracker on Saturday night. Ooh, trying to pick a winner in this one. Ooh, Frio.
It's a very close call, isn't it? This game has matchups to beat the band. The midfields are both super powerful.
Try and find a weakness in these two sides.
I lean towards Frio's midfield because it's playing so well and it's powerful and big. And Lachie Neal has added to the mix. Pavlich is providing something down forward that we didn't expect. And certainly Walters and Hayden Ballantyne together are fantastic. But the problem for Fremantle is there's no Ballantyne and there's a question of Walters. And therein lies a problem.
That is the problem. Michael Walters, for me, is nearly their most important player.
Yeah, I'm tipping Sydney. You see, they don't bother about travelling. They are... Your instinct says they're both great. I'll go with the home team. Just look what Sydney did in Port Adelaide. Sydney have only lost one game out of their last 18, I think.
It was an important one to lose, though.
Well, it's
the one that everyone remembers.
But it was one game.
Yep.
It's a pretty good record.
It is a good record.
Yeah, brilliant, Sydney. I'm tipping Sydney in this.
No, Frio just for me, but look, if Walters is out, I reserve the right to change my tip because he is so important in that front half. And we saw that through last season. When he came back into the side, he gave him a real spark.
Frio the favourites. They're $1.62, $2.30 for Sydney. I like the Swans in this one. Let's go. And by the way, John, that is an excellent call because time is ticking for Fremantle, and it might tick this year. As much as they look great now, they need McFarlane and they need Pavlich, and they are both players whose bodies are great now, but do we guarantee them 22 games and finals in this condition?
Well, that's it. And McFarlane, I think he even said a couple of weeks ago, his wife expected him to retire and he had to talk her around going around again. So you'd expect at the end of this year he's gone. So they've got one shot at this Frio, and this is going to be their best shot in a long time this year.
Let's go to Luke at Naruma. Good evening, Luke.
Hey, boys. How you going?
Very well.
Just wanted to ask, thinking about this weekend, it was Saturday night, what a cracker. It's my top four this year, all playing in the space of a couple of hours. I just think, do you think John Longmire will kick himself for playing Goodsy in the reserves again this week if Sydney are to fall 10 points short, like I think they will? Goods hasn't been there to pop up for his cameo two or three goals.
The reason he's playing him there is because he believes there are better men for the job at the moment. Yeah, if they lost, you'd certainly think what Goods could have done that somebody else wouldn't have done in a losing team, but that is called hindsight, and if we had hindsight, we'd all be geniuses. In fact, if some people don't need hindsight, some people need eyesight, including the woman who drove straight into the back of me today while I was stopped at the lights on Glen Huntley Road.
Goods in the reserves.
They lost to Richmond, sorry.
They did.
That is spot on.
Round 23.
About 2 in 18. Absolutely.
They do. Goods in the reserves last week. 3 goals, 20 possessions, opposed to Jack Steele most of the day. Only Kirtley Hampton had a go on him. They played against GWS, lost quite comfortably. So he's probably not in the greatest touch yet, Adam. You like him in there because of his experience, but look, he's out at the moment, and that's just the way it's going to stay.
Now, we're going, after the break, to have a look at the 3 Sunday games. We just give the ins and outs for the Sunday games as those squads are yet to be completed. But today on Half Time, Half and Plough, Terry Wallace, we're taking calls on who's the best interstate side in the comp. Now, I'm not sure of the name of this caller, but I'll tell you this. A Sydney caller rang in with an argument that on the scale of 1 to 100 for compelling would have to rate a negative 7. I hope his footy team, well, I know his footy team is better than he is.
On 1116 SEN, Evenings with Finey. For Alan Mance, don't lose your pants, call 1-800-ALAN-MANCE.
Welcome back, league teams. Our Sunday games will be done at a pace, a slightly abridged version of league teams, for no other reason than we are making special tributes tonight with Anzac Day ahead of us, of course, on Saturday. But we'll have all the ins and outs for those teams and odds and call teams and selections after Ethan in East Bentley joins us. Good evening, Ethan.
Good evening. Hi. Just to start off, I want to say that I listen to you every night and I love your show. And also, I just want to say as well that my uncle Sim used to open the cricket with you.
Not Simeon?
Yeah.
Why don't you come in one night, Ethan? You can come in here and watch the show. And
I would love to.
Yeah, great. All right. Well,
so I want to talk about the North Melbourne versus Geelong game. I'm a North Melbourne supporter.
Oh, no, you can't come in here. No, I like North. Yeah, go for it.
I really want to see Jack Zabel and Daniel Wells back in and have really good attack on the ball midfield.
I think Zabel's
named. Wells isn't.
Very different players. Zabel's obviously hard-nosed practitioner in at the ball and the opposition, whereas Daniel Wells is very important outside run, and both of them need to be playing for North Melbourne to make the top four, not today, not on the weekend, but they need to play most of the season. I think you're right there, mate.
Yeah. I also want to see Jared Waite have a great influence on the game and kick a lot of goals like he did against Brisbane.
He was a bit quiet last week, Jared Waite. He struggled a little bit against Port Adelaide. And for North Melbourne to take the next step this year, they do need him firing. Because I thought Ben Brown played quite well. He just needed that extra support from Jared Waite.
That's a problem with 3 tall forwards. I mean, Jared Waite will respond if you kick the ball enough times to him and kick it to him well enough.
You've got to share it between the three.
When there's Ben Brown, Petrie and Waite, then sometimes he has to wait. It's at Carlton, he was, on some occasions, the only target forward.
Yeah, Jack Holmes did a really good job on him last week.
Well done, Ethan. Now, let's have a look at ins and outs. First of all, for Geelong and North Melbourne, into the Geelong side comes Rivers, Hawkins, Hall and Smith, Colin Jasny and Smets out, Lonigan concussed, and Jimmy Bartell with that knee. Jake Colin Jasny, if playing, will make his debut as the second of the twins from Tassie.
He is key defender, so a little bit different to his brother Cade. Really good kid too. Interviewed great at the draft combine. Clubs are really impressed with him. So he's the next generation of key defenders then at Geelong. And look, they need a couple to come through because they're an ageing list in some circles. For North Melbourne, the ins are Brad McKenzie, Trent Dumont and Jamie McMillan. The new player is Trent Dumont from South Australia. Really good player through the under-18s. Some strong form in the VFL last week and also last year. So let's hope he gets an opportunity, whether it's this week or soon.
You might watch Trent on the Dumont. That's an old...
Is it?
It's an old brand of TV in America. And it was so synonymous, was it, with television that, like hoovering the carpet, you used to watch the Dumont.
Watch the Dumont. A couple of milestones. Ben Jacobs, 50th game, ex-Port Adelaide player for North. But Tom Hawkins, 150th if he does play.
And our thoughts, of course, are with the Hawkins family. His father, Jumping Jack, was a great guest with Poults and myself last year. And we extend our deepest condolences on the loss of Jack's wife and, of course, the boys.
Yep.
Mum. The odds in that game, North Melbourne $1.60, Geelong $2.35. I just think that the Cats at home will make those odds look stupid. I've liked them all week, and I'm sticking with the Cats.
I'm going to go North Melbourne.
Western Bulldogs versus Crows. Western Bulldogs. And by the way, for a more comprehensive preview of the game, be listening after 10 o'clock for Selection Dissections take in Matthew Boyd, Easton Wood, Marcus Pontepelli, Clay Smith, and Bailey Dale. Out, Dale Morris with a pectoral muscle, Mitch Wallace with a back injury. The new player is Bailey Dale.
Lightly built flanker from EDS in Metropolitan Melbourne.
And ins and outs at the Crows.
Mitch Grigg in, Jared Lyons in, Matt Crouch in, back from injury, no outs at this stage. Also, just on Clay Smith, first game back after another knee reconstruction last week in the VFL, best on ground and rewarded straight back into the senior side.
Easton Wood was thought to have a soft tissue injury. That seems a quick return. I'm not sure whether he will play. Western Bulldogs Adelaide is the twilight game, and that will be called by Matty Granlin and KB, 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on a Sunday. The Doggies $3.75, Adelaide $1.77. Should be a cracking game.
Yeah, Adelaide for me, their form's too good. Whilst the Western Bulldogs have been impressive at stages, I think the Crows are just a little bit more seasoned.
Yeah, they like playing now at Etihad, so I go with them. And the last game, the Sunday game, we'll also be covering is Brisbane West Coast. Brisbane in. Tom Cutler, Mitch Golby, Nick Robertson, Tom Rockcliffe, Matthew Leuenberger and Ryan Lester. Matt Maguire's been omitted, and for a team that's short of talls, that doesn't read well. Jaden McGrath has a foot, and Sam Mays has another foot. 2 feet between them.
Pair of feet, Jaden McGrath in for surgery too, as we speak. Just saw some photos on Twitter. The West Coast Eagles ins, Jamie Bennell, Brant College and Fraser McInnes. The new player would be Fraser McInnes if he plays, who's shown some good form at waffle level. Brant College had 38 possessions in the waffle last week and is pushing hard for a game.
That's it. I want to thank you for joining.
No worries. Tipping that one?
Oh, definitely the West Coast Eagles.
And I think the Eagles, yeah, look, Brisbane's lack of forwards means that West Coast's lack of key defenders doesn't really hurt them or impact them this week.
With McGovern right to go, that's the tick-off for my tipping of the West Coast Eagles. Debating, but this is just somebody that wasn't willing to answer a question.
Let's see what our listeners think, who they nominate. The best interstate side and why. Pete's in Mitcham. G'day, Pete.
How you going, fellas?
Going well.
Sydney.
Why?
It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Well, no, I don't think it is. That's why we're asking you why.
Oh, well, I reckon it's a no-brainer. I reckon it's a done deal.
Yeah, well, why?
Yeah, it's, what? Anyone can say no-brainer. Give me a reason.
What's the reasons why they are so much stronger than anyone else?
Forward line, back line, on ballers, the whole team.